This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Trust with a Chaser by Annabeth Albert, narrated by Mark Bachman and Iggy Toma. 1. Mason. When Adam stepped inside the glorified closet I was using as an office, eyes all twitchy and hands wringing a bar towel, I knew I wasn't going to like what came out of his mouth. "Sheriff Sexy just walked in. He's your problem." "Fuck!" I squeezed my eyes shut and took a deep breath. "Please don't call Police Chief Flint that. He might hear, and I'm pretty sure he'd find a citation for you, and I'm not bailing your ass out. You're just worried that one of these days you're going to slip up and call him that." Adam grinned at me. This was an old argument. He'd been calling Flint that stupid nickname since we were in high school. The hard-nosed cop wasn't one to cut teen drivers any slack, especially if they were in any way associated with the name Hanks. "Anyway, you know he freaks me out. I've got no idea what he wants. All our permits are in order, right?" "Of course." Standing, I grabbed the folder with the permitting paperwork. I prided myself in the organization I was bringing to the bar and grill that I co-owned with Adam and our friend Logan. Flint wouldn't find anything to complain about, not with me in charge. "I'll go deal with him. You go back to the bar in case we get a rush." Adam snorted. Despite it being opening weekend, traffic had been embarrassingly light. We'd worked for weeks transforming the old tavern, a Rainbow Cove institution for decades, into the newly named Rainbow Tavern. The gay-friendly bar and grill was our vision for pulling our sleepy little coastal town into the 21st century. Logan had crafted a new menu of upscale bar food ready to go, and Adam had innovative drinks specials at the ready. All we needed were customers, and not to run afoul of Nash Flint on our first day of operation. Flint was a Rainbow Cove institution himself. Born and raised here, same as Adam and me, but unlike me, he'd never left, sliding into his father's shoes as police chief, and apparently fitting the role as easily as a pair of broken-in jeans. He'd been Officer Flint last time I'd seen him, almost 10 years prior. Guess I could have seen him had I come down for Freddy's trial, something I still felt niggles of guilt over, and I told myself that was why my stomach fluttered on my way out to the tavern's dining room. Unlike Adam, I'd never found Flint particularly... sexy. All my thoughts fled as I took in the man sitting in front of the plate-glass window. He dwarfed the small wooden chair, one of dozens that Adam and I had painted bright colors. Broad shoulders stretched the confines of his uniform shirt, biceps bulging under his short sleeves. His cut-glass jaw was firm as ever, as were those hard, hazel eyes. But what had been frankly terrifying to my teenaged self made my 27-year-old libido sit up and take serious notice. Flint blinked as I approached, head tilting to one side. I'd been getting a lot of that since I'd been back in town.
"Mason. Hanks?"
"The one and only." I stuck out my hand. "What can I do for you, Chief Flint?" He returned my handshake with a sure grip, only a moment's hesitation. I guessed he wasn't all that used to shaking hands with a Hanks. Oh, well, I was out to prove to the whole damn town that I wasn't like my father and brothers, and if I had to start with Flint, so be it.
"Nice place you've got here."
His eyes swept around the renovated room, restored antique bar on the far wall where Adam wasn't bothering to conceal his nosiness. Dance floor beyond that, colorful tables and chairs in the front of the bar, only a handful occupied, despite the dinner hour. "Thanks. Our permits are all in order, I held out my folder. Liquor licenses on top. He waved the folder off.
Not worried about that.
No? Then why the heck was Flint in my establishment? Good. We're on the up and up. You won't have trouble from us.
Glad to hear it.
He said, levelly, eyes skeptical, reminding me that I was, after all, nothing more than a Hanks.
Cheeseburger.
Pardon?
That ringer kid didn't see fit to give me a menu, but I'm trusting you all offer something approximating a burger. Salad, no fries, and an iced tea.
You want to order? I was still struggling to keep up with him.
This is a food establishment, right?
He shook his head as if he hadn't expected more from me. And that rankled. Of course. I crossed the room in long strides, grabbed an order pad from the bar, ignoring Adam's gaping. As soon as I returned to Flint's table, I added, "Anything you want. On the house."
None of that.
He sighed like my very existence was tiring.
Got my meals from the old tavern for years. They kept a tab open for me.
We can do the same.
Let's see if you can cook first.
He said, voice drier than yesterday's toast.
I thought I'd come by, check the place out.
Appreciated, I said, and meant it. Business. Any business was good, but people in Rainbow Cove trusted Flint. If he gave us the seal of approval, more locals might give us a try, make us less dependent on the tourist trade that we were going after. Tourism took a while to build, and our grand plans of making Rainbow Cove an LGBTQ travel destination weren't going to happen overnight. We needed every customer we could get, Flint included, even if he was the unlikeliest of allies.
You still haven't brought me a menu.
He shook his head.
But whatever you've got passing for a burger is fine. Nothing vegan, though.
We've got local grass-fed beef, third-pound patty on a brioche bun with a pesto mayo and local gouda, or...
I reckon that'll do fine.
Flint always had a bit more country than coastal in his voice. Not southern, but you could tell he was rural Oregon through and through. And I liked the slow, deep rumble of his words. What I didn't like, however, was the implication in his tone that he wasn't expecting much from us.
Sure you don't want fries? We have hand-cut sweet potato as an option with a chipotle dipping sauce.
As far as salads, I've got side, Caesar, springberry, and pecan.
I'm on duty here, kind of pressed for time. The burger and a side salad are fine, and I don't need anything fancy.
Yeah, well, maybe I want to give it to you. I quashed that thought, same as I had the one about how hot he looked in his uniform. Wanting to impress Nash Flint wasn't going to get me anywhere. I'll put a rush on it. I made a note on the order pad, not that it was really needed, since Logan hardly had a packed house to worry about. As I walked over to the window to put in Flint's order, I noticed more than one table giving him curious glances.
Hell,
maybe I was wrong about any business being good business. Last thing I needed was Flint scaring away what few customers we had. Not that he was known as a gossip or anything like that, but he was awfully old school. Traditional. The last kind of guy you'd expect to find at a gay bar. That was for sure, and even though we were attempting to attract a mixed clientele, he stood out.
Nash. Mason Hanks was trouble. And not the same kind of trouble as his good-for-nothing brothers and father. Hell, even his uncles were a thorn in my side, same as they'd been for my father. The Hanks family was always up to something. Mason, though, he'd always been a bit different than the rest of the family. A preemie named for being no bigger than a mason jar. He'd been an asthmatic kid and scraggly teen. Nothing like his overgrown bulldog brothers who'd terrorized everyone both on and off the football field. He'd been... well, homely wasn't a very kind word, but it fit. all big teeth and floppy hair and blotchy skin and knobby joints that didn't seem to quite coordinate with each other. But the man who'd taken my order had nothing, absolutely nothing, in common with that kid. And he was trouble. Taller than I remembered, he had to be pushing 6 feet now, with a sturdy, muscular frame. The Rainbow Tavern t-shirt he wore stretched across his chest quite nicely. As he talked to someone in the kitchen through the window behind the bar, he rubbed a fuzzy jaw that gave him a rugged look, made him seem a bit older than the late 20s I knew him to be. Yep, trouble. And what was with this Rainbow Tavern business? The cheerful, multicolored logo on his shirt looked like something out of a Portland Pride parade, a big change from the traditional ship's anchor logo that the last tavern had used for decades. Folks around here relied on the tavern for a greasy burger, cheap beer, and its reassuringly familiar facade. And from what I'd heard, Mason's redo offered none of those things. All organic meat this and local lettuce that, and microbrews with whimsical names, and brand new decor that seemed intent on proclaiming exactly how welcoming the place was. Which was all well and good. And unlike some in the town, I didn't have a bone to pick with his gay tourism agenda, except for the part where it made getting my dinner break burger a mite more uncomfortable than it had been previously. That was all. I didn't much care for feeling exposed as I waited for the food, all eyes on me, people wondering. I'd gone almost 40 years of working my ass off to avoid that kind of wonder and speculation. But still, the tavern was the closest eating establishment to the police station, and the local economy sorely needed a boost. I wasn't going to take my business to the chain fast food joints up on 101 just because I was scared of some idle gossip. That'd be the sign of a coward, and that was the last thing I was. A blessedly short few minutes later, Mason brought my food. The ringer boy who was tending bar always had been a bit skittish around me, so it wasn't much of a surprise that he was making Mason wait on me. One house burger, a salad, and I had Logan toss on a few fries, on us. I just wanted your opinion on the new sauce. No, no, I would not be giving Mason Hanks my opinion on his sauce. Ever. But my mother had raised me with manners, so I nodded. Thanks. We bake the bread in-house, and... Are you planning on hovering my whole meal or just till I start chewing? I couldn't resist messing with him. Just a little. His cheeks colored. Yep, there came trouble, all right. No, of course not. But if you have any feedback... Still hovering. Got it. He licked his lips before backing away. His full, surprisingly pink lips. His much, much too young lips. Too young. Too Hanks. Too out. I'd known about the ringer kid ever since I caught him up on Mill Peak Road making out with the star running back, and he and Mason had been thick as thieves back then. I wasn't all that surprised when I heard Mason had gotten himself a fancy boyfriend up in Portland. I had been surprised that he'd come back to town. Usually, when people left Rainbow Cove, they left for good. And ever since the mill closed and the fishing business bottomed out, more people had been leaving than coming, that was for sure. Oops, forgot your iced tea. And there he was, back again, this time with a full glass of some pale stuff that didn't look like any tea I'd seen before. That's tea. It's an organic green blend we're trying out. I'll stick to water. Thanks just the same. Darn. Mason looked like I'd kicked his raggedy dog, the one that used to follow him everywhere. Thought people might like a change. Change is hard. Didn't I know it? I put all my years into the advice I handed out, trying to remind myself that I was indeed older and wiser here. Take it slow. Change the buns if you must. Get that fancy beef. But maybe leave a man his Lipton, you know? Not so much change. Got it. He nodded. And for a brief second I finally saw his younger self and his grown-up visage. He'd always nodded like that while promising me he'd never speed again, only to go and do whatever fool thing he wanted next. I had a feeling this would be more of the same. No Lipton forthcoming. Still, after he finally left me in peace to eat, I had to hand it to him. The burger really was first rate. Nice yeasty bread, grilled, with a thick patty that had a perfect sear on it. I wasn't really a picky eater, but this was top shelf. With 40 approaching faster than I liked, I'd been trying to avoid fried food, but it would have been rude to not at least try the sweet potato fries. They were sinfully good, crispy and tender, with the right amount of heat in the sauce. "Dessert? Pie on the house?" Mason showed up right as I was finishing the fries. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, the kid was so eager to please, it was almost painful. A few more diners had filtered in while I ate, but the large room was barely a quarter full, if that. "I'm good. Check, please." Mason looked down at the paper in his hand. "I wish you'd let me comp this." "But I won't." I plucked it out of his fingers, ignoring the brief electric burst when our hands brushed. I was well accustomed to ignoring this sort of attraction. Mason might be more trouble than most, but I could tamp down my rowdy body. I dug out a 20. "Keep the change."
"So you liked it then?"
"Oh, yes." Took me a second to remember that he meant the food, not the brush of our hands. "Food wasn't bad," I allowed. "Suppose I'll live."
"Want me to set you up a tab now?"
I laughed. A rusty sound that I didn't make much anymore, not since my dad had passed, and first my mother, then Steve, moved away.
"You're quite the salesman, aren't you? They teach you that at that fancy school in Portland?"
"Culinary Institute isn't that fancy, and it was the restaurant managing experience that came after school that taught me to always try for repeat business, and to appreciate customers who spread the word."
His smile was all gleaming white teeth. Maybe the fancy Portland boyfriend had been a dentist, and it was not okay the way my hands fisted at the thought of the Portland guy.
I wasn't really a spread-the-word type, but I nodded, mostly because I needed to end this conversation before trouble could give way to temptation, something I was not going to let happen. The walkie-talkie on my hip crackled.
"Chief? I've got a fender bender up at Butte in Lakeview," Marta reported. "Locklear's on a call already."
"I'm on it," I spoke into the radio. Our department was so tiny that even calling it a department was a bit of politeness. Three officers, including me, a dispatcher and some part-time office help. That was us. Mason blanched and dug out his phone. His family lived down Butte Road, way on the outskirts of town. His face brightened as he tapped around on the gadget.
"Good. It's not Jimmy."
"This time," I added, because that was the way of it. Might not be Mason's brother tonight, but it would be sometime again soon. Seemed like I couldn't go a week without a Hanks causing some kind of commotion, and I'd do well to remember that.
2. Mason. Flint was back. He sat at the same table, by the window and near the door. It was Tuesday, shortly before close. We had a grand total of 4 other people in the place. 2 of them were tourists, a pair of men from Ashland, doing the Highway 101 Scenic Coastal Drive on their way to Lincoln City. Wonderfully chatty, they'd been the first to find us, via one of the ads I'd taken out on LGBTQ travel sites. Go me! Flint had been in twice over the weekend, ordering exactly the same thing each time and eating with grumpy efficiency that didn't invite small talk. Not that I was eager to talk to Flint, but Adam and Logan kept making me wait on him, and Flint had a way of acknowledging my presence the same way one might a raccoon who raided the trash can.
"Hanks?"
He nodded as I came over with a menu. "Mason?"
"God!
I hadn't even been back 2 months, and I was already tired of being a Hanks. I was not one of the Hanks boys. Never had fit that mold.
Would you like to hear this week's specials?
The usual is fine.
He leaned back in his chair, not touching the menu. I hadn't expected more from him, but I didn't need him pointing out my service shortfalls if I forgot the menu again.
Late night for you?
I asked as I wrote the order ticket.
You could say that. Busy week and a call right at dinner time.
He made a pinched-in face, one that made me think he needed a shoulder rub or something, and that was exactly the wrong sort of impulse to be having around him.
Well, we're happy for your business.
Liar.
His smile was unexpected, and hit me like a punch.
Damn, that thing was lethal. Nash Flint had dimples.
Dimples on that granite face just didn't fit, and yet it completely transformed him into something approachable and lickable and... No, I can't think like that.
We are.
Seriously, it had been a slow, slow opening weekend. I'd happily take whatever cash Flint wanted to throw our way.
You're probably worried I'm going to scare your customers away.
You're not the health inspector.
I smiled back at him. Felt weird as fuck bantering with Flint, but it also made my chest warm.
Now that would have broken my poor father's heart.
He made a little shooing motion with his hand.
I haven't eaten since 11. Not to be rude, but...
Going. Duly dismissed, I scurried off to the kitchen window.
Order!
I called to Logan. It's for Flint, so whatever you can do to hurry.
Tell me he didn't order as usual.
Logan came over to the window. His blonde hair was sweaty, not in its usual careful style, and his apron was splattered with the remnants of a full day of cooking.
He did. What's the problem?
I know we've got bread. I saw to that myself, working on the bread in the morning while Logan prepped for food. My specialty might be back-of-the-house management, but I hadn't endured the long hours of culinary school for nothing.
Not the bread, the burger patties. Remember how Sunny Skies called and asked if they could deliver tomorrow morning instead of today? Well, I'm out of beef patties.
This was the problem working with small local suppliers. I'd been happy to accommodate when Zeb at Sunny Skies had said his truck was acting up, but now someone was going to have to try to coax Flint into ordering something else. As a group, we'd decided to go local as much as possible, but the responsibility of sorting out all of it fell to me. My back tightened. I couldn't shake the sense that I was letting people down, Flint, who just wanted his burger, and Logan, who deserved reliable supply deliveries.
You want to come out, tell him about the specials? Maybe hearing it from the chef?
Ha! He scares me.
Logan was every bit as bad as Adam. I groaned.
You didn't even grow up around here, and you drive like a grandma. You've got nothing to worry about.
I'd met Logan at culinary school. In the years after, he'd complained about always getting sous chef jobs and never the executive chef position he desperately wanted. I'd convinced him to go in on this place with Adam and me. With us, he had freedom to craft his own menu at last, but I knew small-town life would be an adjustment for the Portland native.
Still, I better stay back here. You handle Flint. Tell him my chicken's top-notch.
Grumbling the whole way back to Flint's table, I dreamed up a number of punishments for Logan and Adam as a distraction from the gnawing sense of guilt that the supplies weren't running as they should. But still, next family with six kids who came in was all theirs. Flint was looking at his phone when I got to his table.
Chief?
Yeah?
He looked up, mouth quirking as if he already knew he wasn't going to like what I had to say. How do you feel about chicken?
Chicken?
He sounded as if I'd proposed cockroaches.
we're out of beef patties, see, but Logan makes this amazing crispy chicken sandwich with a sun-dried tomato aioli.
I don't care much for chicken or tomatoes.
Flint shook his head, and I felt his disappointment all the way to my toes. I hated not being able to deliver what he wanted. I'd never admit it, but watching Flint devour our food was a near sensual experience for me. He never really complimented it, but he ate with such gusto that it was hard not to feel a little bit proud.
How about pizza? We've got a few on the menu. One's a white sauce with sausage and mushrooms. You might like that.
Flint's skeptical eyes said that he doubted that very much, but he gave a hearty sigh and nodded.
Guess that'll do.
Great. I turned to head back to the kitchen.
And my water?
Flint called after me.
Crap!
Some server I was. But I had something I thought might make up for the lack of a burger stashed away in the bar fridge. I hurried up and got him a glass and raced it back to his table in record time.
What's this?
Flint eyed the glass with clear distrust.
Tea?
Lipton. I brewed a pitcher just in case. You came in, sounded a bit desperate. Just in case. I repeated.
Lame.
Ah. Well, thanks.
Another Flint smile, just as disarming as the first, and enough to make me want to brew gallons of tea to earn more. Right then, the travelers from Ashland finally got up from their table, heading for the door.
Have a safe trip,
I called.
Oh, we'll try.
They slowed up, the taller of the two speaking to me.
Thanks again. The burger was amazing.
Next to me, Flint's groan was almost audible. The Ashland traveler's eyes skimmed over him, going wide with obvious appreciation.
And I must say, what a progressive and inclusive community you have here.
Oh, crap!
I knew what the guy was assuming, and I wasn't sure how to deflect it.
We try.
A muscle worked in Flint's jaw.
You all drive safe now. Watch that light up at Lakeview and 101.
Will do.
And thanks for your service. Always a pleasure to see one of the family in blue.
And with that, the couple was gone, and I was left dying on Flint's behalf.
Tourists,
Flint muttered.
What did he mean by family?
Heck, I was absolutely not going to be the one to tell Flint that they'd misread him as gay. That would drive him away for sure.
Tourists,
I echoed lamely. I'll have the pizza right out to you. He nodded, effectively dismissing me. As I walked back over to the kitchen window, a little question danced in my head. What if the Ashland couple had been right about Flint? I'd never really stopped and thought about it before, other than my extremely guilt-ridden magging on his hotness in uniform the last few times he'd been in. But the more I thought about it, the more I wondered. He'd never once been linked to a girlfriend that I could remember. He was the consummate bachelor cop, totally married to the job. The town was liberal enough that I didn't think Flint would be fired for being gay, but his father was even more of a hardnose than Flint, so maybe that played a factor. Who knew? On a whim, I glanced back over my shoulder, and, to my surprise, Flint looked away fast. Maybe and what if joined forces to dance in my gut, but I silenced both with a heavy dose of, oh, hell no. It didn't matter what Flint was. He wasn't for me.
Nash. I didn't like pizza. Thin crust, thick crust, meat lovers, Hawaiian. None of it worked for me. Too messy, juggling crust and sauce. And it always seemed to leave me hungry again an hour later.
probably because of all that work trying to not end up wearing it. But I hadn't wanted a whole thing with Mason, what with him reciting the menu and being helpful and me being picky. My father always made sure that I ate what was in front of me. Not that he would have been a patron of Mason's Tavern, or a fan of its brand of upscale bar food, or the idea of our town as inclusive. I'd played dumb with the tourists and Mason, but I'd known what they were implying. There were risks in patronizing this place, but truth was that Rainbow Cove needed Mason's big idea to succeed more than I needed to feel comfortable. And like Steve had always harped on, maybe I cared a mite too much what others thought or assumed. The tourists were on their way up to the more populated parts of the coast with a favorable impression of our little town. That was what mattered, or so I told myself. By the time Mason brought my pizza, I was the only one left in the dining room, and the ringer boy had started wiping down tables and sweeping up, all while giving me a wide berth. I sighed. I knew he wasn't over me catching what he'd been up to in high school, but I wasn't the one who'd outed him, no matter what he might have thought. My job had been making sure him and Mason didn't break their fool necks with their pranks. Nothing more than that. Not that they were boys any longer. Ringer had had the lumberjack thing going on for several years now, with a full beard that matched his red hair and bulking muscles. And Mason, well, the time past puberty had been very kind to him. He was wearing another Rainbow Tavern t-shirt and tight jeans, one better suited to that bar in Portland I'd let myself visit last time I went up to see my mother. Lord, but that had been overwhelming. An unqualified mistake. "Here you go." Mason set the steaming pizza on one of those little pizza rack things, sliding an empty white plate in front of me as well. "If it's not what you have in mind, it's on us, okay? It's food. It's hot. And I'm hungry enough to eat my Jeep." I grabbed a knife and fork and set to cutting up a slice. Mason raised an eyebrow at me using silverware to eat a pizza, but I didn't much care what he thought. I had a uniform to keep neat. So I gave him a hard stare, one that sent him back to the bar area. Finally, in peace, I tried the pizza, and it was... Portland folks were always using orgasmic to describe food or drink, something I'd never seen the logic in. But as I chewed on my first slice, I could finally see the appeal of gushing over a food product. My tongue had seldom known such rapture. The sausage was crisp and savory, the sauce creamy and well-spiced, and the cheese a snowy blanket over the pie. I ate the whole thing before I even realized what I'd done. "Not bad, right?" Mason was back, clearly not scared away for good by my grumpiness. And why that pleased me, I couldn't say. "It hit the spot," I allowed. "You got the check? I figure Ringer's about to run me out, so you can close." Ringer regarded me from across the room with cool blue eyes, not disputing my assessment. "Yep, still not over high school, that one." He said something to Mason when he went over to the bar to run my card. Whatever it was, it made Mason's cheeks pink. Damn, but I liked a man who blushed. It was a thing, I guess you could say. A thing I had. Steve had been a blusher, something I used to tease him about privately, and I got a major kick out of trying to make him go red. I hadn't missed Steve in ages, filing him away under chapter closed. But longing hit me all over again right then, watching Mason. I'd say I needed a Portland weekend, but that had been such a disaster last time. No, I was better off simply tamping down whatever strange urges Mason Hanks brought out in me. Resolved, I headed out into the windy summer night as soon as I got my car back. I'd parked in front, coming straight from a call about a suspected vandalism over at a jewelry gallery near 101. So that meant moving my official Jeep a whole half a block down to the parking lot behind the station, which was really just a glorified annex onto City Hall. This time of night we kept the door locked, so I used the keypad to enter the building.
Evening, Chief.
Marta looked up from her knitting. In her late 60s, she'd been a dispatcher for my father, back before that was even a full-time position around here. She dispatched the police, fire, and rural ambulance crew, holding down the fort at a wooden desk in the station's main room.
Candace isn't in yet.
That's fine, I'm in no hurry, I lied. Candace, my fresh-as-a-calla-lily junior officer, was always running a step or two behind. But we'd had a dickens of a time filling the third officer slot, and I wasn't about to chase her away.
You get food?
Marta asked, not missing a stitch as her fingers flew. Yep, the tavern again.
That place.
She made a face.
It's never going to be the same. You need to go clear out to Rhodey's on Lakeview to get a decent hamburger now.
Food's actually not bad. I was many things, but a liar wasn't one of them. You should check out their house burger sometime.
I wouldn't be going in there, thank you very much.
She made a tisking noise and her needles clanked.
And you should be careful, too. Don't want people getting the wrong impression.
Or the right one. I rubbed my jaw as the image of the tourists from earlier popped into my head. It's good to give them business. It's what the town needs, fresh ideas. She wasn't going to agree with me on that, but I tried anyway. The town was half full of aging hippies, but Marta was one of the die-hard traditionalists, upstanding singer for the first evangelical choir, and loud objector to the whole gay tourism plan. She shook her head.
We'll just have to agree to disagree. And to think it's one of those Hanks boys to boot. That whole family never amounted to a hill of beans.
On that last bit, we were in agreement. But I kept my mouth shut, same as I always did when she got to gossiping.
Surprised he even serves you, after you went and locked away Freddy.
He got a fair trial. I shrugged, because who knew? Maybe Ringer wasn't the only one with a grudge against me. Mason seemed hungry enough for business that he might not care that I'd been instrumental in convicting his fool of an older brother for felony criminal mischief. Regardless, it was another reminder of why I couldn't go getting too friendly with him. He might not spit in my food or turn down my cash, but the whole damn Hanks family had swung far away from me the day Freddy got sent away. We were never gonna be friends.
3. Mason.
Adam came into the kitchen where I was helping Logan plate a big order. He had a shit-eating grin on his face, which immediately put me on edge. We finally had a decent dinner rush, and it had me and the two teenagers we'd hired as weekend waitstaff hopping. Thank God. We had a grant that had covered the renovation, and that would, in theory, get us through the lean early months, but we did need to start showing profit at some point. We'd each invested a huge chunk of savings in the endeavor, and the weight of knowing that Adam and Logan had their futures riding on this idea kept me up at night.
"Tell me nothing's wrong." I ordered Adam, because I wasn't sure I could handle a screw-up on what was supposed to be a good night.
"Flint's got a date."
Adam's grin got wider.
"He's got a what?"
I almost dropped the bread I was adding to a salad plate. Saving it, I loaded the finished plate on the tray.
"A date. Flint just walked in with Curtis Hunt. Not in uniform."
Logan looked up from the grill.
"The crazy woodcarver guy with the gallery in the old gas station?"
"The crazy, gay, recently single woodcarver guy."
Adam hopped from one foot to the other. "I better get back out there, but I put them at Flint's regular table." Carrying the tray of salads out to the table full of couples in the center of the room, I took a long look at Flint. I wasn't sure I'd ever seen him out of uniform before. He looked good. Light tan polo shirt that made his eyes look greener than usual, dark blue jeans. The working man kind, not the designer kind that Logan and I wore clubbing in Portland.
His short brown hair looked damp. Shit. If Flint had showered first, maybe this was a... something. Not a date. Flint didn't date, right? But ever since the other night when the tourists had put the question in my head, I'd found myself wondering where exactly Flint went to get some. And in a sign of the coming apocalypse, he was actually reading the menu. And laughing. I distributed the salads, then headed over to their table. Evening, Chief. Curtis. I nodded at his dining companion. A couple of years older than Flint, Curtis Hunt hadn't changed much since I'd been gone. Same wild brown hair, same rippling sleeve tats, same bulging biceps on an otherwise slim frame. Even if Flint was into dudes, I couldn't see him being into Curtis's escaped-from-a-biker-gang vibe.
"Mason Hanks, you got big."
Curtis gave me a smile, one with far more appreciation than I'd ever gotten from Flint. I owned a mirror. I knew that I looked nothing like the photos of my teen self that I'd begged my mom to burn, and I'd used that distinction to my advantage, to sow some seriously overdue oats in Portland, but Curtis's frank appreciation still made me a bit... squirmy. "Iced tea for you, Chief?" I directed my attention toward Flint instead. "I'm not on duty for the first time in a blue moon. I've got Holmes and Locklear holding down the fort. You got Bud on tap?" My face screwed up before I could stop it. "We've got a selection of local ales and lagers." Flint's ton of bricks sigh cut me off.
"You've got mead in tonight, right?"
I bristled at that. "Of course."
"We'll both have a lighthouse ale." Curtis's voice reminded me that it wasn't just me and Flint that night.
"Try something different, Nash. You might surprise yourself."
He winked, and I wasn't sure which of us it was for.
"And is your vegan burger soy-free?"
Flint made a snorting sound.
"Don't think you can call it a burger if it never mooed."
Was this seriously a date?
They certainly bickered like a couple.
"The black bean burger is soy-free and vegan. I've got a sourdough roll for it to go on, and almond cheese as well."
Almost a decade working food in Portland had taught me how to speak alternative diets fluently.
"Nut cheese?"
Flint shook his head.
"My usual, please, with the real stuff."
"I got all the real stuff you can handle right here." I didn't know where that flinty retort had come from, but I bit it back. "Got it. I'll have the beers right out." The dinner crowd kept me busy. I got Flint and Curtis their beers, but didn't have time to linger or listen in. In the kitchen, Logan was cursing up a blue streak and attacking ingredients with a vengeance. Adam was busy making drinks and running relief for the waitstaff, and it was all glorious. This was what I'd envisioned when we first heard the old tavern was on the market. Adam had come to Portland for a weekend, and we'd done some brainstorming. My friend, Brock, had suggested we apply for a state grant targeting rural businesses to help purchase the place. It had been a late night with lots of drinking and dreaming, but I'd seen this and been powerless to deny the appeal. I whistled to myself as I brought out entrees and didn't complain when Adam sent me to the storeroom for another case of the local ale that was selling well that night. The storeroom was down a long, narrow hallway at the back of the building, right beyond the two restrooms. Thump! The door to the men's room opened right as I was passing, and Flint crashed into me. Luckily, I didn't have the beer yet, because I almost certainly would have dropped it under the shock of having Flint's bigger body pressing against me before he righted himself.
"Sorry."
He took a step back, but didn't rush away. His eyes had flared darker, and his mouth quirked. Was he as rattled as I was? I hated that I couldn't tell. "It's okay,"
My voice sounded deeper than usual.
Everything good tonight?
Flint shrugged.
Your guy can cook. Beer's okay. Still think you should have Bud on tap for the local drinking crowd. Not everyone wants to spend $6 a bottle on the fancy stuff.
Noted. God, he was close. I wasn't going to be the one to move away first. Flint, I mean, Chief, what are you doing tonight?
Tonight?
One of Flint's eyebrows flew up.
I'm having dinner.
With Curtis? I prompted. I wasn't ever going to get another chance like this, so I took a deep breath. You on a date?
You taking up gossip as a new hobby now that you're back in town?
His voice was just as deadly as his sneer, but there was something else in his expression, a flicker of something I couldn't name in his eyes. No, just curious, that's all. You're both more than welcome.
It's not a date.
Flint gritted out. You sure? Does he know that? I prodded, driven by reckless impulse.
I'm sure.
Flint took a step forward, crowding me against the wall. His voice was low and hot as sin.
Trust me, if I was on a date, he'd know.
Yeah. I didn't even know what I was agreeing to, only that I didn't want Flint to move.
Curtis is an old friend. Troy and I went to school together, and after he died last year, I've been worried about Curtis keeping too much to himself. I asked him to get some food, and he chose here. No big drama.
He still didn't step away. It was hard to breathe, hard to think.
So he's not your type, you're saying?
I was lucky that the words didn't squeak out.
He's not my type.
Flint growled and leaned in and... Oops! A female tourist wearing a shirt advertising a town in California bumped into Flint's back. I'd served her a second daiquiri not long before, and she had a tipsy laugh. Sorry.
No problem.
Flint stepped back, and I felt the loss of his warmth immediately.
I'd better get back out there.
Flint didn't look back as he strode down the hallway, leaving me reeling. Fuck! What had almost happened there? Had Nash Flint seriously been about to kiss me?
Nash. It wasn't often that I was an idiot. I'd been raised to use my common sense, restrain any wild urges, and rely on logic and planning for my actions. I was a lawman, and I took that role very seriously. I didn't lose my cool, ever. Except, apparently, around Mason Hanks, where not only had I lost my cool, but I'd gone full-on insane to boot. I made my way back to the table where Curtis was waiting, calling myself every name in the book. Had I seriously been about to kiss that smirk off Mason's face? I didn't know. And the not knowing chased away my previously good mood. I like what they've done with the place, Curtis gestured, indicating the colorful room. For the first time since I'd been at the Rainbow Tavern, there were people on the dance floor, and a pleasant din of happy chatter and clinking glasses in the main dining area. It's all right. They need Bud or PBR or something cheap on tap, I groused. Tightwad. Curtis should know, seeing as how I'd only gotten him to come out with the promise that the meal would be my treat. Otherwise, Curtis would be eating whatever rations of sprouts and potatoes he culled from the garden out behind his place. Curtis didn't spend any money he wasn't forced to. You should get out more, then. Come give them some weeknight business. Why I'd suddenly become free advertising for Mason, I couldn't say. First Marta, now Curtis. Mason should be paying me for the word of mouth.
Of course, thinking about Mason and mouth in the same sentence was not a good idea.
I just might.
It wasn't hard to follow Curtis's eyes as he watched Mason's trek across the room with a loaded tray.
That Hanks boy sure grew up fine, didn't he?
Didn't think you'd be wanting to fish in those waters, I said, barely restraining a growl.
I'm grieving, not dead. And we both know even Troy would have noticed that ass.
Curtis gave me a sly smile.
And you did, too. Don't deny it.
Curtis and Troy had been among the very few in town to know the truth about me. Part of it, at least. Too young. Maybe if I repeated it enough, I'd start to actually believe it. And a troublemaker.
You need more trouble in your life.
Curtis laughed as the ringer kid, not Mason, slid steaming plates in front of us. I refused to feel a pang of anything about that, except maybe guilt if I'd chased Mason off, acting like a trapped bear in the hallway.
You guys need ketchup?
Ringer spoke to Curtis, not me.
Second round of drinks? We're good, thanks.
Curtis gave him what would be a winning smile on other people, but it made Curtis look that much more feral. A thought occurred to me as Ringer hurried away. Please tell me you and Troy never fished there.
Adam?
Curtis made a clucking noise.
Never. Too toppy for Troy, too emotional for me. It'd be like taking a teddy bear to bed. Too damn cuddly.
Thank God for small mercies. I nodded, even though I was going to need brain bleach to get the image of a cuddly Adam Ringer out of my head.
Mason, though, he'd be fire in the sack.
A low growling sound escaped my throat before I could call it back. Curtis grinned at me.
Yep, you've noticed too.
He's a Hanks, and too young. And I'm not interested in anything local, you know that. Curtis sighed. This was an old argument between us.
No one would care if you were more open. Really?
I care. I dug into my burger with an emphatic bite.
Your father's dead, Nash.
Curtis shook his head as he took a bite of his food.
Time to move on.
That wasn't ever happening, but I didn't want to fight, so I focused on my food for the next while, and tried hard not to track Mason as he made his way around the room, serving the various tables. It didn't matter what had almost happened in the hall. He'd be aflame to the carefully guarded kindling that was my life. Didn't matter how much Curtis prodded, I wasn't going there. Mason was the one to bring us the check.
Any dessert? I'm trying out a key lime cheesecake on the specials board if you're interested.
Oh, we're interested.
Curtis was going to sprain something, what with those winks and grins of his.
Nash?
None for me. I slid Mason my credit card. Our eyes met, and he looked away fast. Definitely none for me. I'd probably scared him in the hall, going all caveman like that. I should apologize, but fuck if I knew the right words for that, and certainly not in front of Curtis. Later, after I dropped Curtis at the converted gas station he both lived and worked out of, I headed home. My house was not that far from the square. One of the small streets that dead-ended at the bluffs that led to the ocean below town. We didn't have an ocean view. Dad was one to value square footage, proximity to the station, and garden space over fanciful things. And our neighbors were lifers, unlike the folks who owned vacation cottages closer to the state park and beaches. It wasn't often that I had a Friday night to myself like this. And I searched for some purpose to keep the aimless feeling at bay. House was quiet as I let myself in. Too quiet. I'd never lived anywhere else. I'd been born here, right in the back bedroom. Grew up here when it was noisy and full of Tricia and Easton and me. Stayed on to help Mom when Dad first got sick. It had been noisy then, too, with the hours and hours of TV news he insisted on watching. I'd remained when Mom moved to Portland to be close to my sister Tricia and my aunts after Dad died. Now it was just me in an empty house, too big for me, really. But I'd been unable to even think of getting something new. Still restless, I headed straight for my vice, the thing I knew would chase Mason Hanks from my head. Got the metal box out of the garage, picked my favorite chair in the living room to get comfortable in, and set to freeing my mind. I sorted the lures first, going over my collection, deciding what I'd make that night, and wondering if I could sneak in some early morning fishing before I had to be back on duty. Duty. That was what I had to focus on. Duty to the town, first and foremost. I couldn't let Mason Hanks distract from that.
4. Mason. Red lights flashed in my rearview mirror. Never a good thing. Not in any hurry, I'd driven the long way around town, taking Montana Street from the tavern up to Lakeview, grabbing a moment to admire Moosehead Lake on this clear Monday afternoon. The bulk of the town was squashed between the lake to the north and the bay to the south, with the best houses having a view of one or the other. It went without saying that the Hanks family wasn't among those vying for prime real estate. We lived to the east of town, out in the dusty sticks, down Butte Road. Just as I exited the Butte and Lakeview intersection, I noticed the red flashing lights. I pulled into Ralph's bait shack's parking lot, not wanting Flint to get sideswiped on Lakeview. And it was Flint. I'd recognized his Jeep. In the mirror, I watched his large frame stride toward my car. When he stopped, his voice, deep and cop cool, invaded my open window.
"Do you know—"
He blinked, lowering his mirrored sunglasses.
"Hanks?"
And damn! I'd never been one for the whole hot-for-cop thing, but the shades and the glower and the authoritative stance were a sight to see. "Mason." I corrected him yet again.
"You know why I pulled you over, Mason?"
Flint's deliberate emphasis on my name made my stomach do a weird flip. "Honestly? No. I hadn't been speeding, that much I knew. I was never in a hurry to get to my dad's place."
"Your right brake light's out."
"Oh, fuck. Thanks." I tried to remember if that was something they wrote tickets for. Jimmy and Freddy had just about every ticky-tacky traffic violation there ever was, but I hadn't had so much as a speeding ticket since leaving Rainbow Cove behind. "Am I getting a fine?"
"Not this time."
A muscle worked in Flint's jaw. A very sexy muscle that reminded me of a highly inappropriate dream I'd had the other night, starring Flint's mouth. And I could not be thinking about that dream with Flint still leaning on my door frame.
"You got a registration for this rust bucket, or is this one of your brother's specials?"
"In the glove. I sold my Maxima to get more money for the restaurant, but I don't trust Jimmy's cars. This one's all mine."
"Smart boy. Those heaps your brother passes off as working automobiles are a menace."
"Not a boy," I muttered. It was stupid, arguing with Flint when he'd said he was letting me off, but I was still wincing from Friday night and that encounter in the hallway. I wasn't going to let Flint get away with acting like I was 15 again. I was all man, and we both knew it.
"No. No, you're not."
Flint regarded me coolly over the rim of his sunglasses, making me feel just as crowded as if he were pressing me against that wall.
"Which is why you'll be smart."
I wasn't sure what he meant by that. Smart would be staying far away from Flint, that was for sure. "I'll have Jimmy fix the light before I come back down tonight, and double-check the work myself."
"Back down?"
He frowned.
You're not staying with your family?
No. I'd tried that when I'd first come back and almost lost my mind dealing with Dad and Jimmy's drama. Not that I was going to share any of those ongoing conflicts with Flint.
You can curse around me, Mason.